I'm going to call the meeting to order. I'd like to call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Thursday, April 25th, 2019, and the time is 1:30. Today, present is Representative Merrick, Representative Josephson, Representative Ortiz, Representative Knopf, Representative Laban, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, and Co-Chair Foster. I'm Representative Wilson, and today we have two things before us. And the first one is going to be HB 41, Shellfish Enhancement Projects and Hatcheries. We last spoke about this particular bill. We had a working document in front of us. And just to remind everyone what the change was, the basic change was making it so this program will become self-sustainable. We hope it grows very much. And we had a fiscal note that we want to make sure that we have it updated on that. And is there anything you want to say about your bill before we go over the fiscal note, Representative Ortiz?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Support the bill a lot. I think it offers a lot of potential for the development of our fishing industry and the growth of our fishing industry, and that's about it.
Perfect. So I appreciate that. So one of the discussions I've been having with the Department of Revenue is, do they need to adjust their system? And that's what the $50,000 fiscal note was. I reached out to Fish and Game, and I want to make sure I put this on the record on how this fishery works. And if I'm incorrect by any of it, Representative Ortiz, please feel free to. I've learned a lot about fishing that I didn't know before on how these work. But this came from Mr. Ray Bung, helping to explain why this takes a while before we would ever see any kind of revenue. And so it says that ADF&G will implement the regulations, accept on application, process the application through the public process, and ultimately issue a permit. In his opinion, the earliest a permit could possibly be issued under this statute, if the bill was passed this year, would be the fall of 2020. Further, once a permit is issued, the project would have to be developed, which would include building the necessary infrastructure, collecting broodstock, producing juveniles, culturing those juveniles to the point they could be released, and allowing them to grow in the wild to a harvestable size. I would anticipate this to take, depending on the species and infrastructure needs, approximately 5 years or more. In a best-case scenario, this takes it out to about 2025. Couple this with ADF&G practice of utilizing the precautionary approach to permitting new enhancement projects, in which a project is first permitted at a small scale in order to evaluate it for unanticipated consequences prior to increasing production to a level that could support a targeted commercial common property fishery that could have a cost recovery assessment applied. In best case scenario, this likely takes us out to approximately 2030. And the reason this is important is that, you know, to change a system in the Department of Revenue right now, when one may not be needed, is one reason I believe that a zero fiscal note right now better anticipates what's going on. Also, my understanding that this is the cost recovery assessment is simply one option that a fishery could take, but not a requirement. So there would be other ways that they could go about it that would not impact the Department of Revenue whatsoever, because it is not my intent as the chair to require any of the agencies to take on any more costs than they already have, and that would not happen underneath this bill. Are there any questions about the fiscal note? And any? Oops, representatives. Anybody? Who are you
pointing? You're talking, so I'm looking at you.
Okay.
I don't have a question.
I'm so used to Representative Carpenter's hand being up, and it was not, so he was not asking a question. My apologies. I'm going to give the opportunity whether Commissioner Tangeman would like to weigh in at all on this. I wanted to make sure that we stated all this correctly because his department is doing a great job, and we do not want them to do work that is not necessary. Welcome, Commissioner Tangeman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bruce Tangeman, Department of Revenue. I think I understand the intent of what you're speaking to. Unfortunately, for the Department of Revenue, I don't agree with this approach in this fiscal note. Page 2, second to last paragraph, it says these costs will be absorbed by the tax division. I think this sets bad precedent when a new tax form, regardless of what the implementation timeline might be, The bill has an immediate effective date, and it's imperative that the department update the revenue management system to be prepared for taxes to come online regardless of how they're going to be implemented. So I believe there was talk about IA receipts or receipt authority, but I don't see that in this fiscal note. So if there is something that could help that way in preparation, we just as a department can't absorb things such as upgrades to the revenue management system like that, unless I missed something, Madam Chair.
And I think you're misunderstanding the last sentence. The last sentence says, it is the committee's intent that any DOR programming cost should be absorbed by the requesting entity. That would not be you. That would be the fishery who is requesting this update to be done.
Madam Chair, if that is the intent, I think it'd be better if it was reflected in the fiscal note itself, because I'm seeing zero right now in the change in revenues. So I guess that's where I'm a little confused.
Okay, let me take a short at ease. Back on the record, there's a lot of details that goes into a fiscal note. So this fiscal note will still reflect the zero, but we are going to make sure that in the language of the fiscal note that it specifically states that all costs, if a fishery decides to go this route, will bear on the person utilizing the fishery, that would be the requesting entity and not the department. Any questions? Does that work for you, Commissioner Tangeman?
I believe so.
Okay, so we will be passing this bill out if it's the will of the committee with the fiscal note that we have from Fish and Game and a forthcoming fiscal note from the Department of Revenue. Any questions about the bill? Any final comments, Representative Ortiz?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And what is the will of the committee?
Madam Co-Chair, I move CSHB 41 version 31-LSO 218/U from committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal and forthcoming fiscal notes.
Any objection? Hearing none, we'll take a short at ease to sign the paperwork. Okay, we're back on the record. We're going to go to the next bill. This is House Bill 131, Appropriation Limit. I'm going to go through a presentation. This is a group effort here. What we're trying to do at this point is we do not have the constitutional amendment currently before us. So we want to look at if we're not going, which I don't know what's going to happen, but this would be a statute change and what it would look like and the bits and pieces of it as we go through this and suggestions that we might want to see. Again, this is a committee bill that I am hoping that the committee all participates in how it is formulated. So with that, first of all, why a spending cap? Two reasons. First, the spending cap limits how much spending can increase from 1 year to the next, meaning we don't want the budget to grow too big too quickly. Particularly, we want to avoid overspending when we have surplus revenue. And since Alaska has a history of large swings in revenue, this brings me to my next point. A second reason a spending cap is important is to force us to save. My research shown that other states, which we will see, with successful spending caps also have savings mechanisms in place in order to bridge the periods of time when there has been revenue downturns. A 2010 report from the National Conference of the State Legislatures describes how Colorado's Taxpayers' Bill of Rights initially allowed excess revenue collected above the cap to be refunded to voters. However, after the severe economic downturn in 2001 and 2002, when Colorado experienced significant revenue shortfalls, there was no savings account to provide a buffer, and a pretty tough economic recession followed. As a result, voters approved a legislative referendum in 2005 to forgo the projected mandatory tax refunds and instead keep surpluses in a savings account to provide a fiscal buffer when revenues shrink. Alaska has the constitutional budget reserve. We need to keep it, and we need to fund it during the years when we have excess revenue. So we're going to start with the next slide. There are five decision points when talking about a spending cap. What's the starting point going to be? The growth rate? What is included under the cap? What is excluded outside the cap? What do we do with excess revenue? So the goal today is to understand the pros and cons for each decision point, to think about how different options might sense under a wide variety of circumstances, and to understand the pros and cons of a spending cap in statute versus in the Constitution. As you will see in the next slide, there's a mix within the states that do have a tax and expenditure limits in place. Next slide. What are other states doing? As of 2015, 28 states had a state tax and expenditure limit. These are the blue, pink, and yellow. The black square states do not have a spending cap. Of the colored states on this map, 17 are in the Constitution, 11 are in statute. Why does statute versus Constitution make a difference? They have found it's just a level of flexibility over time. What I don't know at this point is how many of them started in statute and then became part of the Constitution and were able to prove themselves out before they kind of took care of the flexibility of it. This next slide will show what happens over time. This is a historical slide since 1980, roughly when our current constitutional spending cap started, and oil became a major contributor to our state revenue. Here, the orange line is the unrestricted general fund spending with the permanent fund dividend, so that those are both included in the line. And the green line is the UGF revenue with PFD. The story goes for about 25 years. Revenue and spending did not fluctuate much. But then starting in 2005, we went on Mr. Toad's wild ride and revenue and spending experienced wild swings. We had 13 years of chaos. Revenue spiked really high and our spending jumped up accordingly. Then starting in 2012, our revenue went on a free fall for about 6 years, and it took a while for spending to decrease as well. During that time, we spent over $13 billion out of our constitutional budget reserve account to help offset the budget deficits. And during most of our years, you would see this swing on kind of a roller coaster ride where we would build up the constitutional budget reserve, and then we'd go into some tough times, and we would go back down, and then about the time we kind of hit bottom, it would go right back up. But we're not seeing that now. We're kind of now at a steady portion, not just how much oil is coming down, but the price of oil as well. As you can see, there was a big jump in revenue for FY19. That is when we passed with the percent of market value, the structured draw on the permanent fund earnings reserve account of 5.25%. Calculations show that if we had an effectual spending cap in place, we would have saved more during the high revenue years and spent less out of the constitutional budget reserve during the low revenue years, to the tune of about $15 billion extra dollars we would have still had in our constitutional budget reserve. So, what are the lessons learned? It's important to have a savings account to provide a buffer as well as an effectual spending cap. For those who may not know, we have had a spending cap, and you see it on this slide. No, please go back to the other slide. So the gray line that you're seeing right here, that is our current spending cap that we have. And luckily, we have not gone up that high. We would probably see ourselves in much worse shape than we are right now. So here's what we have now. Again, the orange line is a total unrestricted general fund spending with a permanent fund dividend. Capital, statewide items like debt, retirement, and oil and tax credits. You also can see the light orange line that shows just agency operations. And the green line is the unrestricted general fund revenue with the permanent fund dividend. The gray line on top is the current spending cap. According to this rate, our unrestricted general fund spending should be around $10 billion in 2020. The rate is too high. It combines both CPI and population. Population is the dark gray line on the bottom. It's been steady growth except for the last couple of years. The dark blue line is this bill's spending limit. In this graph, we modeled the blue line both backwards and forwards to see what an effectual spending cap might have looked like had we had it in place. This growth rate is the last 5 years trailing the CPI average at about 2%. Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Your green line, you have it labeled as UGF revenue plus the dividend. Isn't it the UGF revenue plus the structured draw and not the dividend? I'm just wondering.
You are correct. Thank you for the clarification. So we have the green dotted line is estimated revenues published in the spring revenue source book. As you can see, it appears that revenues are estimated to remain steady for the next 5 years. And of course, that is an estimate. I think what it shows us more than anything else is that during most of the years when we had a lot of money, when I was here, I can remember the budget talks, and we would start decreasing the budget and hoping that in April, before we left, that oil would go up, and many times it did. And sadly enough, instead of holding to the budget we had, what could have been, we did with what was currently in front of us. And I think that also shows us that it may not just be a spending cap that we might want to be looking at, but again, the possibility of looking more at a two-year budget versus every year going through the same process, especially as we're looking at finding ways that we can be smarter in the way that we spend our money. But currently we have it to where we do this every year. The current spending cap illustrates why long-term growth rates left untouched can become very large in magnitude. Why? First, what the rate is matters. If you just consider the dark blue line, which when you look backwards at the simple rate of 5-year average as a CPI, seems more in line with our revenues and reasonable expenditures. The other issue we have that most other states don't have is that we are mostly dependent still on our oil revenue that comes in. We're not as diversified as many other states are. Next slide. However, the second point, regardless of whatever rate we choose, we have to contend with something called compound annual growth rate, the CAGR. You start with $5 billion growth, grow it by 2% inflation, then next year you begin with $5 billion, $100 million, then you add 2% on that, and so it goes. Over time, the compounding effects yields a spending magnitude that may or may not be in line with revenue. Why? Revenue and expenditures are not based on the same things. For revenue, oil prices are not based on inflation. They are based on supply and demand, technology, shale fracking, global politics. Market value of the permanent fund is based on the value of stocks, bonds, and real estate. That is also based on supply and demand. consumer confidence, and global market forces, which would have been the green line. I'm sorry, can you go back to the other one? Thank you. For expenditures, the light green line is just agency operations, and the dark green line is everything UGF. And remember, that includes any general funds to attract federal matching as well. An effectual spending cap would have been extremely helpful between 2005 and 2018, assuming that we had the political will to follow it. And I think that's probably where the debate comes on the difference between having it in statute and having it in the Constitution. But beware, compound annual growth rate is a mathematical calculation that has economic consequences when it's inside a spending cap. I would recommend periodic reevaluation of any spending cap we put in place and make sure it continues to make sense for Alaska. And that is normally what the concern is if we put something in the Constitution right away to find out whether or not we have all the levers exactly where we want to have them. And there's a lot of other debates for that as well. Next slide. This is based on revenues. This is undesignated general funds, money we can use to spend on all agency funding, capital retirement, and the dividend. I took these revenue numbers directly from the 2019 spring revenue forecast and the permanent fund financial statements for the percent of market value. I have a blue percent of market value for FY 2017 and 2018. We did not pass the POMV until 2019, but wanted to show an example of how the revenue would have been for analysis purposes. In this bill, we have excluded debt, so this is why I subtracted debt from the revenue to get the total amount of money that we have left to spend, which is green. Then, as for expenses, here's what we have spent. Next slide. Here's what we spent in the last few years from unrestricted general funds. FY 18 and FY 19 exceeded the hypothetical spending cap, which is in blue, and all the last 3 years exceeded the actual revenues and required us to pull money from the constitutional budget reserve, which is a red amount. I excluded debt from this slide as well so that we could have the same side by side. And the draw on the CBR includes the debt. So yes, you can see that we have gotten a little, you know, better, and we have decreased the budget. We have not decreased it enough yet to where we are actually spending within our own means. So again, the next slide just shows what's included. Anything with UGF is included as the agency spending, a retirement obligation, capital for matching, and the permanent fund dividend. Excluded is the permanent fund principal corpus, debt payments, disaster fundings, and deposits into the savings accounts, which we have many of. And that is just the basic bolts and nuts of what a spending cap can look like. And again, we would just go back to we have the same levers as we began the presentation with that are the things that you can change, which is, you know, do you start the starting point with $5 billion? The reason that was chosen, as you saw in the numbers, that's pretty close to where we are now with some decrease still going. The growth rate, again, whether that would be, you know, the CPI, or just pick a certain amount. But if you just pick a percentage out of the air, that, again, you would have to go back and review to see whether or not we were able to spend within those means. Mm-hmm. Representative Sullivan-Leonard.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a quick question, please. As we look at the existing statute with regard to our spending limit, can you compare that then to what it is that you're proposing?
I would like to present a chart so we would have all those amounts on that. I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. We'll make sure that we'll have that for us in the next meeting.
Madam Chair, what I'm looking at is on the graph here, it shows that gray line as a continual increase across the years as you had highlighted here. So when we look at a spending cap for what we presently have in statute, it's not a plateau. It's increased, and that's determined by what?
That I may need to help a friend. We are borrowing someone from the other side who's going to help us with this. This shows even the chairman needs a helper from what's
with the
yeah. It's a group discussion. I appreciate the question very much. If you put yourself on the record, we could use a little help.
Good afternoon, committee members. For the record, my name is Caroline Schultz, and I'm staff to Senator Natasha von Imhoff from the Senate. And we had almost a mirror image bill presented in our committee a couple weeks ago. So if you don't mind just asking your question one more time, please.
Sure. I'm looking at 131 as it's presented today, but I'm trying to calculate then why we have such a plateau with the gray line, which is what we have presently in statute. What are the factors that allow that growth over time instead of a clear plateau of like 10 billion straight across? What is it that's causing the increase there?
Representative Sullivan Leonard, through the chair, the current constitutional spending limit represented by that later gray line, the future forecast is based on a 2% inflation assumption as well as the Department of Labor's official population projections. The way that the constitutional spending limit is calculated, it is adjusted for both inflation and population, and that's why it does have a growth rate that appears to be quite a bit higher than both the proposed spending limit in this bill as well as population. Or if I just put another line on there just showing 2% growth to represent inflation, again, that forecast is based on a 2% inflation assumption and the official population projection. Which, and then if you look at the dotted gray line, the darker line, that represents the Department of Labor's official population projection.
Okay, and through the chair, then, that's the average for CPI then? You're using Anchorage's percentage then for that?
Through the chair, yes, using the Anchorage CPI.
It's around 2%? Okay, thank you.
No problem, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Knopp.
I'm just kind of looking at your exclusions. You don't have any federal dollars in there, and I would assume that any capital money would probably come from under the cap. I'm just wondering about a provision for additional capital projects. I mean, I would think you'd want your spending cap to relate to agency operations, debt, general government operations, and so I just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
So your cap is the unrestricted general funds. Federal funds are not within the cap. This would be, so that's why when I designated, so it's the unrestricted general funds, but would also call unrestricted general fund match monies, but you would not have the federal funding as part of this graph.
Okay.
Representative Carpenter.
So we talk about agency operations here. Does this also include the capital spending on maintenance, deferred maintenance that we have had conversation on?
Anything that was unrestricted general funds, yes, would be within the cap.
Even though it's not within the operations budget, it is still accounted for here.
Yes.
Meaning the conversation with spending includes.
I'm sorry. It wouldn't be underneath the operating, but the total unrestricted general funds. It would be. Because capital is included within
agency operations, yes. On that line.
No, we're gonna. It would be the orange line that would be the capital.
Representative Carpenter, through Chair Wilson, correct. The darker green UGF spending line does include UGF capital as well as UGF statewide items, and then that lighter orange line represents UGF agency operations, which. That includes just the operating budget for the 17 state agencies.
Okay, so the dark orange line includes capital spending.
Correct.
Okay, that clears that up. So if we're having an open discussion here, we do not generate state revenue by population in the state. So I think it's not a good gauge of where our spending level should be. I think a better understanding of what size of government we should have should be drawn from what size of economy do we have to be able to sustain the spending for the government that we think we want. So a better figure to tie this to would be something like I hate it when that happens. GDP. So that's what I was thinking, is some capacity to measure the amount of money that we generate in our economy that is really what funds our government. It isn't the number of people, because we don't have an income tax. And I know that's where some people want to go, say we need that. But as it stands right now within the state, our economy is what would be a better function of measuring what our size of government should be if we compare the two. We're not comparing that on here, so we can't compare it right now, but that would, in my mind, would be a better way to figure out where our spending limit should be.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, our office did look at using gross domestic product for Alaska as one of the inputs to the spending calculation. And based on Alaska's historic economic growth rate, as well as the considerable impact that the oil industry and therefore oil price and production has on Alaska's GDP calculations, we actually found that using GDP resulted in too high of a growth rate and too volatile of a growth pattern. So that is actually something that we considered. It's worthy of discussion, certainly, but in our modeling, that the growth rate was too high. One of the things that we considered in our office was, you know, if you think about Alaska as a relatively young state, a developing state in some ways, we have historically had higher growth rates than the rest of the country, and we have, over the last 40 years, been one of the higher growth rate states, which makes sense. So it's hard to say what our GDP growth rate will be going forward. I think it's, given the fact that we are a commodity-based economy for the most part, it's normal to expect that we would still see quite a bit of volatility in our GDP calculations. Our office can provide this committee with some of those graphs, if that's helpful.
And I just want to add, and this bill is to start the conversation, so there is no intent for any type of tax to be added. Is you have to start at the beginning and figure out the different ways of where your starting point is going to be, what kind of percent you have to do. And I think the reason I wanted to bring this forward with the other body is because of that gray line. And I think when this was put into place, I'm pretty sure those who did it thought it was going to be at a level that would keep us in check, that would get that we would not be in the situation that we're currently in. And by looking at that, it did not really prove out to what the makers of it would have been.
So as a follow-up to that, from where the green line starts to spike, fiscal year 5-6 time frame to current, is about a 30% increase in inflation, 10% increase in population. And so if we were to extrapolate out any sort of inflation growth into the future, I know we can't predict that, but 30% increase in inflation is still going to, whatever, if you're using that as a model, it's going to increase quite drastically. There's no way you can get around it.
And I think that's why you have to start vetting all that out right now and figure out what works for Alaska that's going to keep it to where, you know, we're not just, that we don't have the spike like we've been having, you know, on years where we've always been dependent upon what the oil prices are at the end of the year for our budget versus is the budget the right size that it needs to be, not necessarily just how much money that we have for
to spend,
it.
Yes. And I, you know, I've seen some documents where we break out our non-oil revenue versus oil revenue within the state. And so the part of the budget that, or the part of the revenue that's going to spike wildly is the oil revenue portion of it. The non-oil revenue is probably pretty static. And that's a measure of the non-oil ability to produce revenue within the state. So something that is maybe takes that into account, and maybe we're only talking about where we start from the cap. Figure out what right looks like. It's something that looks more like fiscal year 5-6 or an average between the last 25 years there than it is anywhere along the green spike line where we were on a joyride with all the cash in our pocket.
Right. And I think the other part that we need to bring up the importance of this is because if you want, and I think the governor has said this over and over, is that if we want to really get our economy going, we have to figure out, you know, how we make the lines more steady, because the more basically out of whack that we are with the money we collect and how much we spend, if companies think that they're going to come in and all of a sudden you're going to keep messing with some kind of tax regime, no matter which industry you may be talking about, they want something stable. They want to know that they come in and they invest money, whether it's into a resource development or maybe new technology, whatever that is. They want to make sure we're stable, and one of the ways to do that is a spending cap. Representative Johnston, followed by Representative Josephson.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. First of all, I did vote for the constitutional budget cap, and that was not what we were looking for. But secondly, in this, as far as the triggers, you have the capping retirement and excluding debt payment. So in the retirement, are you talking about the total retirement cost, which includes the debt for the unfunded liability?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Johnston, it's our understanding that the way that this bill is written, and again, forgive me that I'm not a lawyer, but that our state on behalf payment for the unfunded liability portion of the ARPA's TERS liability would be included under the cap. I think that that's a point of discussion.
And so the debt payments would be for any of our bonding?
Correct. That's outside the cap.
The clarification for that. And just since this is some questions and some, and sometimes I don't ask questions.
And that's okay, because this is actually a, this is, you know, to me, this is a developing bill that it's going to take all of us to put the pieces in that we believe that needs to be done so that we can get our budget at a level and we can literally sustain it based on our revenue. So you may make any statement you'd like.
So coming from the municipal background where we did have a spending cap that actually has been quite functional, and granted this is more, you know, government closer to the people is a different government than sometimes from degrees of separation, but and it was a CPI, population, and any maintenance and operation for capital or bonding.
Was the current?
That's municipality of Anchorage, and that is one that has worked pretty effectively. It's only when sometimes some people try to pull some things out from under the cap, it hasn't worked as well. But the basic cap works quite well. And I would beg to differ with you as far as population, because I think population growth does have an effect on the cost of government, because government, and it's true, local government is even more this way, but you're the last stop. And so the need of government for a larger population can be larger. Of course, you can have a savings in cost due to the size, but it's still, there's more of a need as population does grow for government. And I think your capital budget would be your best example of that, or your highways, that you have a need as population grows to have some kind of transportation to meet the needs of the growth of population, unless you're going to have a population growth that is just a vertical one. Which we in the state of Alaska, I don't think is anything we would want a lot of, or you know what we're looking for. You're going to population does have an impact on the cost of government. Population has an impact on let's just take one of our smaller budgets, DEC. In the Department of Environmental Conservation, they're the ones that have that protect us from sewer in our water, or you know, it's good drinking water. You, for your children and their new homes, are going to want a safe place for them to live, and I think you're going to want a place for them to get a way to get to where they live. So I'm just saying I wouldn't discount population growth. I think it's something that's important. I think CPIs are also a good mechanism. And because we're including capital, and we are still a very young, growing state, I'm very much familiar, and a lot of us are, with what made the big jumps in those orange lines. And a lot of it was the capital budget, and I'm not saying I was very happy with any of that capital budget, and I've had many, many concerns about capital budgets for the last 40 years. But I think you need to consider the capital budget as part of your spending cap, and you need to have a way of financing capital. We have ports, The two of us are sitting here representing two port issues that could be rather expensive. And do we not do them? Or are they part of the Alaskan growth? So, I mean, I'm trying to say this in a way, because I've always felt that we needed an effective spending cap, and I've always said for 40 years that we need a fiscal plan. So I love this conversation, but I'm just sort of saying, looking through experience and looking at a young state, I think we're on to something that's a good beginning conversation.
Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, on the subject of commentary and comments generally, relative to the administration's position about providing some stability to entice and make more attractive our communities, a number of people, including a number of chambers, have said the opposite. They've said that what can happen with the governor's cuts and wholly inadequate services, this is really them talking, with perhaps some embellishment from Representative Josephson. But
just let me clarify my statement. My statement was not on the budget itself.
Right.
Is that if we do not get our budget in line to where we still have big gaps, and companies think you're going to use their profits basically to fill the gap in, they're going to be less likely to come. So, you know, my statements weren't about how far down our budget should be or where it should be at, but if we continue to have these gaps, companies are not going to want to come and invest.
Right.
And so I just want to make sure that we're not getting into a budget discussion.
Well, except that that's...
completely, on where it should be.
Right. Except that that's really exactly what I'm speaking to, that if the level of services were at the governor's proposal from February 13th, I think those same companies would be alarmed, because it moves the bullseye squarely onto them when services are such that people say we can't tolerate this class size or the closure of UAA, et cetera. But I have some questions just so I understand, because for me, maybe not for the others, this went fast. So looking at the slide, that one in fact, that is for the listening audience on the screen, I just want to confirm that the light orange line, agency operations, shows at approximately FY05 a number in the range of $2.3 billion. And is it true that this is adjusted, because it says nominal dollars, is it adjusted for inflation and population when the line continues out to the current period?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, these numbers are not adjusted for inflation or population. Obviously, the lines that reflect the two spending caps shown here, both the constitutional one and the one proposed by this bill, those are calculations that involve the CPI and involve population. But many of you in the audience may be familiar with the legislative finance graph that shows a similar pattern with revenue and expenditures, and those are adjusted for population and inflation. So just to be clear, again, these are nominal dollars. In fiscal year 2005, if it was $2.3 billion or in that ballpark, that's what it was. It's not based on an inflation adjustment.
Okay, and if I could follow up. So, I mean, because I think we've seen, again, under general comments, from Ledge Finance, just what you've indicated, so to speak, which is that if you take away, for example, state expenses and you just look at agency operations, the current budget with those adjustments is not that off, for example, 2005. I wanted to say that. But my question, I guess, is for you, Madam Co-Chair, relative to the darker orange color, which you indicated includes capital budgets. What, in terms of available to expend, what on the later slide, what does that reflect in terms of? Well, I think you've shown it here. It shows just these modest capital budgets of less than $200 million. And that gets to, I think, what Representative Johnston was talking about in part. Am I right about that? So the available to expend hems us in with incredibly, relative to contemporary state history, very small capital outlay. Am I right about that?
through the starting point that this you know, that we have used in this example, yes. And again, that's why this is the beginning of the discussion. Maybe the starting point is somewhat off. I think what Representative Johnston was also referring to, the Fairbanks North Star Borough also has a cap, and debt itself sets outside of the cap. And so that's why sometimes they have gone to a bonding mechanism instead, so they can, you know, be outside the cap and not have to make some of the decreases other places to be able to make improvements.
Well, last comment in there, until I studied this in great detail, I'm sure there are others, but we were told, for example, that the retirement monies, I think in FY 2021, are going to jump sort of the minimum payment to stay in that 78% viability range where we are. We're in the range of $400 million. There was this sudden shoot up that we all sort of guffawed at. And I just wanted to note that those things are sensitive and we have to track them too.
And I think that goes back to the point that I made, is that as we're working through this and trying to figure out what that starting point is, and I'm going to do a little bit more investigating on the states that have theirs in statute versus constitution, I would find it interesting to see whether or not they started in statute, found out that it worked after 2 or 3 years, and then went to a constitutional portion of it, or whether or not they had a more steady income, whether that's through some kind of taxation or maybe however they get their revenue or through property taxes, that they're able to make that adjustment. I think what makes it difficult for Alaska as we're trying to set this is, if oil is still our primary way of doing it, it is so volatile. How do you really, does anybody here know in 5 years how much more might be coming down and what the price will be? So again, I think you brought the perfect point. What is the starting point and how much does it lock us in?
And if I might, just a last comment. Relative to the good years, every year is a good year, but the years when oil prices spiked, sort of the Palin early Parnell years, while it's true that we spent down a huge amount of money, we were able to do that because we saved an enormous amount of money, just an enormous amount of money. And the unfortunate thing is, and you've sort of said this, there was a window of time to put together a fiscal plan and we just didn't take it up. But our predecessors, some still in the building, gave us that opportunity. We just didn't exercise it.
Back to the will of the legislature. Representative Ortiz.
Madam Chair, getting back to some of the discussion brought up by Representative Johnston, she talked about how her experience with a spending cap model has worked fairly well in the city of Anchorage, correct? I think it's important to note that one of the differences is there that they have a revenue source, taxing source of from that population growth. As their population grew, the revenue grew because of the taxation part of it, and that's where we don't have that at the state level. There's not, just because we get more population doesn't mean we're going to get more revenue. Just because we get more GDP growth doesn't mean we're going to get more revenue, for the most part. So I think that should be part of the discussion as we move forward, is the recognition that that's it. I mean, there's a difference, and until we get a source of revenue, we're always going to have that problem with increasing population. Brings increasing costs in education and roads and things like that, but it doesn't bring increasing revenue based on our current situation, which is different than communities. Communities have local taxing authority. The state at this time doesn't, with some minor exceptions.
And that's a really good point, because for the Fairbanks North Star Borough, although we have only property taxes, we don't have in the borough, we don't have sales tax or any other kind. The city of North Pole does, but where, like you said, when population grows, outside of their cap will be new development. So let's say a new mall opens up, you know, that gets added up and over. And we've had one for a long time, and this is the first year since it was put into place that the borough has actually come up against the cap. And I think what they have seen is we haven't seen a lot of growth as far as new homes, new buildings, and so their tax base really hasn't grown at all. But more people have come in just utilizing, you know, some of the infrastructure that's already there. So that's just a that would be a good discussion maybe to bring Ledge Finance in on how our spending cap would differ from those from municipalities who have different revenue because they don't get the same oil revenue as we do. They have to depend on something else. That's a good point. Representative Ortiz.
And another thing that I might add as well is that, to me, when you look at that particular graph, while agency spending, the light orange line, does increase from year to year, the big bumps when we had increases in spending during the same years we had increases in revenue was largely as a result of the capital budget, right? I mean, the biggest reason for the big jumps was the capital budget increases.
But we grew both.
We grew both. It does show that we grew both. But we grew capital spending much more quickly than we did agency spending.
Thankfully.
And with that, we also saw the growth of private industry because private industry benefited from those increased capital expenditures. You know, they got the contracts to build the roads and to do all those kinds of things. So with that added spending came the growth of the enterprise during that time. So there's that.
Good point. Representative LeBond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad we're having this discussion, and this is certainly a topic that is timely. Looking at the dark green graph, the peak of revenue, both high in 2007-ish and low in 2017, was buffered by the CBR draws. And you can see in the dark orange line where it crossed in 2012, that was the beginning of the draws on the CBR. And the encouraging part of this is today you look at those two lines, the dark green and the dark orange have come close together. So we were achieving what we need to achieve, and that is we're matching expenditures with revenues. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you start to talk about the capital budget and capital improvement projects and what have you, one of the things to consider in your spending limit is some kind of a relief valve that could be a very high three-quarter vote type of relief valve, but under the governor's constitutional limit that he has in here, he does have an additional excess appropriation amount for capital improvements. So there's different ways you can write the limit itself to help with that so that you're not cutting off your ability to to have capital projects to help with the economy. And I think that that's part of the conversation that we need to have is, do we want to look at any kind of, relief valves as we go forward and move in this discussion?
Thank you. Representative Knopp.
So, Madam Chair, so I look at the green spike when revenue started going up and oil prices jumped up 2010, 12. And, the state has, a history of supporting all of our municipalities and boroughs, everything, and that's where them spikes in capital projects came from. Although, we give everybody everything they ask for in them days, and without a lot of vetting on some of them projects, some were good, some not so much. So I think that's something, you'd have to consider as you go forward with the spending cap. Are we going to finally start telling our municipalities that we're capping them if revenues come back and we have excess revenues? I think that's part of the conversation, and therefore they take that burden on themselves. Also, I wonder, in the big spending spikes, as you mentioned, we saved just under, 20 billion, 27 billion between the CBR and SBR back in them days. I wonder if that's part of that big spike. Was that all spent, or was that part of savings as well? In that, do you know the answer to that?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, you're correct. Essentially, the difference between the green line and the orange line reflects what was put into savings during that time.
Put into savings as well in that time, so. And removed as well, so. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of things to consider as we go to a spending cap. I also wonder at some point if our restriction on UGF funds will limit our ability to accept federal dollars. At what point do we cut off our nose by our face if that ever comes around again? So I just think there's a lot of conversation to be had there yet. I'm glad, I think at some point we have to figure out how to rein in our spending for sure, but I just think it's a larger conversation here yet. So.
And you're right about that lever. There is a possibility because this would restrict unrestricted general funds, and it wouldn't matter whether or not it was just total UGF spend or whether it was matching federal dollars. Again, why you're trying to look at those levers and seeing what you want to put in place and keep it tight enough to where we don't think we just need to go change it because it didn't work this year. I mean, it's going to take some pain to kind of get down to that needed amount. Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Representative Knott brought up one of my, I was going to say that some of this was depositing money into savings. The other part that dark orange was when we paid off $2 billion to PERS and $1 billion to TERS. $2 billion to TERS and $1 billion to PERS. So there were some, basically a lot in that big spike was actually savings. And we need to keep that in mind as much as we'd like to grumble.
So the PERS and TERS, for those who are listening, on our acronyms as our public retirement fund and our teachers' retirement fund. Representative Knopf, did you want to respond to that?
Just one thing I missed is, you know, at that same time period, we put a lot of additional capital money into the corpus of the PFD. The legislatures did over time as well, which should be reflected in that. So that was not spent back down. So, again.
Good point. Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
And just a couple other things to think about, too, is we did see an increase in capital spending. New capital projects increase maintenance requirements going into the future as well that is found in a capital budget. One way to equalize the conversation here on how we spend our money would be to pull that that conversation of maintenance into agency operations, and it competes with every other good idea, Ferry, that is out there. We have to take care of that maintenance. That's a must-have for the buildings that we want to keep, and right now, it's a separate conversation from all of the other things that we want. And so one responsible way to go forward might be to pull those maintenance requirements into an operations budget to compete with everything else. The other thing that I would like to say that's been highlighted here, but, you know, if I shake my crystal ball, the future is going to look different when we consider federal funds. We have a ginormous deficit at the federal level, and at some point in time, there's going to have to be a conversation about what we do with spending at the federal level. And I can only assume that means we have to bring our spending at the federal level in line with our revenues. And what does that mean to states who have a third of their budget with federal dollars coming in? So a wise position for the state to take would be, how can we wean ourselves from federal dollars? And that conversation needs to be something that's well thought out moving forward, that if there was a day in the next 10 years where we don't have to rely on federal funds, that would be a good conversation and a good place for us to be in. Because when the problem hits the federal, when that discussion happens federally, we're insulated from what that happens to a big, large degree if we don't have to rely on federal funds. So, to me, that has to factor into whatever budget discussion we've got with a cap. Let's not rely on federal funds going forward.
Any other comments?
No.
Representative Josephson.
Yes, Madam Chair. I mean, of course, with great respect, I mean, the retort is that the same would apply to Eielson Air Force Base. Dollars are dollars. I'm actually more familiar with the federal constitution than the state constitution, and there's no separation in that respect. And I continue to believe that it's not incumbent on the 700,000 of us to be especially heroic in that regard, because the other 300 million Americans will just stare at us with wonderment.
So, yes, sir. With that being said, here is the challenge. So this is a starting point, and so I'm hoping this is your homework assignment. So I wanted to get all that extra, you know,
Rebuttal would be.
Oh, well.
No, I have it. I welcome it.
So the challenge right now is that this is our starting point, and this is not the 100% answer. So we will bring this up when many of you have any idea of other thoughts that you want to put into this, because at this point, you know, I would like to see at least, I mean, I'd like to see a constitutional issue come before us, but we're running out of time. We also understand that as well. This is something we absolutely could get into place statutorily before the session ends, and then give us that opportunity to actually practice it, and with the intent that we will still be the Finance Committee next year to fulfill it as we go through the budget process. But the starting points were exactly that. They are starting points. Is the $5 billion right or wrong? Come back with something else. Maybe it's too high. Maybe it's too low. Maybe 2% is not the right percentage point of that. But it is a point that, you know, this is not my project. This is our project to be able to. And I know there have been individuals around this table who have had their own appropriation limits as well. I am more than willing to hear those as well as part of this discussion, and then having a comparison on what it does. This is way over. This is long overdue. I think we could all agree on that, even though we may not agree on the amounts or how we should, you know, tell a different government to do their work. But I do want to put one thing that I do agree with Representative Carpenter on. With the federal dollars, it does make us dependent on another amount of dollars coming in. And during some of these peak years we had, there was a lot of dollars flowing from the federal government as well. And with a lot of those, and I didn't understand at the time, were all the strings that were attached to a lot of those dollars as well. So if we really want to get ourselves in check, we need to start doing what we started this year and going plan by plan and finding out not about the dollars that are going into those programs, but are those programs effective or not. But I would be remiss if I let this go, because Representative Carpenter has this opportunity first. If there's anything else you'd like to add, we'll do one more round if anybody wants to add to it. And then please, as soon as you have something you'd like to bring before the committee, we will make sure that is put forward, where we have time still to be able to tweak this in a way that is meaningful and it doesn't look like that gray line going out to nowhere. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in response to the federal dollar discussion, I would just like to acknowledge that there are federal funds coming in that largely will continue to come in, and there's a positive impact to that. Federal troops on our land is not something that I factor into my budget, right? But the numbers of dollars that come in for education, I factor into my budget. And so the two are different in my mind, and as someone who's watching on, you know, our discussion here, should keep in mind that there are some of those federal funds that impact our economy but don't impact our budget, and then there are federal funds that impact our budget that, if they were not there, would impact how we do things. So that's what I would say.
Thank you. Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you, Chair. One thing that I'd like to go on the back of Representative Carpenter about maintenance and operations, and there is an expense of that, so I think we need to sort of consider that and how it fits within the UGF and how it fits within departments. The other, living through spikes like we had through those years and previous spikes that we had that were even worse, one of the things is the capital budget. And the capital budget, to me, there's two things that we had missed when we had these spikes in capital budget. One was a thorough vetting system that maybe going to bond will give us a little bit better vetting system than just an out-and-out outlay of capital. But that is, you know, does cost more. The other is when we've had this huge influx of capital, both federal and state, and I think Chairman, what's your name? Wilson mentioned is we had a rush of capital projects that went out on the street without the workers or the ability to actually put these projects on this to make good of them, and the cost of those projects just went skyrocketing. A lot of the projects ended up being done from by contractors that didn't live in the state, and employees were brought from other places because we didn't have the employee base. So as we look at this, I think we need to think about, we do have a lot of need for capital investment in the state, but I think we need to look at having a tampered down capital budget that can be reflected in our population and that can be addressed by our population but still provides growth. And that's my last.
And make sure we understand what the operating cost is of those capital expenditures that we do. We did not do that either. Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a visual suggestion. From fiscal year 2000 and looks like about three, the CBR had a rapid period of growth that lasted until about 2012. Is that an accurate statement? That the dark green line and the dark orange line, the gap between those two, that's the period of CBR growth?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Lebon.
And what would it help in looking at this graph if there was a shaded color in the growth period and then a shaded color in the decline period with just a comment that said CBR growth and CBR decline? Would that help somebody looking at this for the first time to understand where did the constitutional budget reserve money go? What was during this period? And then you can have a comment about it. Just a note.
We'd be happy to add that to the graph.
Thank you. And to remind folks, too, on the constitutional budget reserve, that is where when we take money out of the constitutional budget reserve, we are also required to fill it back up. And so there are certain things that luckily we did, we were very mindful of. And as we had money, although you see a lot of growth going, there was also a lot of money put back in the constitutional budget reserve that we used during our leaner times. Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the graphing and modeling, and what I'm wondering is if, and we had talked about it earlier, about having a slide that would show the differences in the standing constitutional limit that we have on the books right now versus this piece of legislation that's before us, because to look at them and not know what's behind each one of those lines, because there's different exceptions for different spending limits, that would be very helpful to be able to compare them that way.
Perfect. Any other requests? Okay, so counting on you guys to do your part. This is a group decision to pass out of here. We need something. I think we can all agree. Whether it's statute or constitution, we have to start somewhere. So today is the first day. I also want to thank Senator Von Inval's staff for being here and also for her help in getting us started on this. But the sooner we can get it going. So I'm not going to set, per se, an amendment timeline. What I will do, if ideas are brought forward and we can get them modeled and bring them forward, this may be brought forward to us on many different occasions. And as we see them, we can then figure out what we want to see in the modeling and in a spending cap and those things that doesn't make any sense, unlike other bills that we just have come back and then passed back out. Representative Ortiz.
So just for clarification, Madam Chair, are you asking for our offices to put down in writing some of the ideas that we brought forward here orally to your office and to send them to your office to reflect?
Or bring them across the hall, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. And as we get them, as we get ideas, it doesn't have to be that everybody in the committee, but we get even one or two of them, we're going to try to put them together, bring them back to the committee, and kind of build on top of it until we can get to a point to where it's something that we can agree on. Representative Knopp.
So you keep making me think. So I wonder if, you know, I mean, I'm a big capital guy. I'd rather have all capital budgets and no operating budgets if I have my preference. But I'd be concerned about putting capital dollars under a cap, but I'm also concerned about putting supplemental budgets into a capital budget, especially since supplementals usually go to operational items. So just food for thought as we move forward.
With this model, if I'm correct, the supplemental would actually be required to be underneath the amount of the cap.
Yes, correct. Through the chair, the cap as it's written in House Bill 131 and Senate Bill 104 is for appropriations for a fiscal year rather than in a fiscal year. So that would indicate that supplement, and I think it might specifically say that supplementals are included.
So I do have one question when you said that. So because supplementals come after we already have done the budget. So let's say we put a spending cap together and next year we actually abide by it. We have the will to do it. and we spend really close and say maybe we only have $100 million wiggle room underneath it. If the next year, again, we're going on it, and say we have a $200 million supplemental, does that $200 million get reflected on the year before, or will that now be, the supplemental be added into the year that we're now doing that next budget?
Chair Wilson, I don't have the bill in front of me. My apologies, but there's the supplemental would count for the year that the spending cap applies, and there is a section of this bill that asks the governor's office to enforce or to calculate what the spending cap is, and I believe the bill specifically says that the governor's office shall calculate whether or not the supplemental also falls within that cap.
That would make sense, you know, because that's been a big issue as we right now try to even spend within our means. What happens if we do spend in our means and then we come back next year with a supplemental that goes over that amount of our earnings? And I think that's been a concern for many years. So seeing nothing else, and I know you're all going to bring up some wonderful things in the next couple days. Tomorrow we have, at 9 a.m., we'll have SB 61, Commercial Fishermen's Fund, back before us, and HB 16, Local Food Procurement. And with that, it is 2:44, and we are adjourned.